So we went out at the Fontainebleau.
We decided to have it at the Fontainebleau, and we invited people like Bhaskar. We invited D. Walter Cohen. We invited Chuck Wild of the embryology department. We had, let's see, who else was there? Well, anyway, for the first time, we had other disciplines other than endodontics. And we had quite an attendance. Now, the question was, how do you get the money to bring these people down? You have to pay their expenses and so forth. So Sam and I decided that what we will do the year before that is to have a one-day course on the biology of the pulp. That was one of our first courses that we gave. And we had about 125 people present. And we had, we made about $2,500. And we decided to use that $2,500 to pay for the expenses of the course. And well, then what we decided to do is we realized, you know, that there was going to be conflict, you know, people wanting to go out in the pool and so forth. We started our series 8:30 in the morning or 8 o'clock in the morning. By 2 o'clock we were finished, and we called it Poolside Endodontics. And then from then on, we decided, this is another decision that I suggested to them, is that every year we hold it in a different city. Why should the people on the West Coast have to spend all that money to come to Chicago, or we come to Chicago and the people in Chicago area always there? Besides which, if we went to Chicago, we never took our wives. If you go to different cities, you know, the wives come along. So as a result of that, we developed a women's auxiliary division of the AAE.
Which does a lot of good.
Of course. You don't have to rush, you don't have to hurry, they're together and so forth. And so as a result of that, we have now traveled all over. We've been in Montreal, we've been in Los Angeles, we've been in Las Vegas, we've been in San Diego, we've been in New Orleans, we've been in Florida, we've been in Atlanta. As a matter of fact, the areas that Dallas. We don't go to is, and Dallas, the areas that we don't go to is New York and Boston. And well, we had it in Philadelphia. But I think in 1968 we had it in New York. We did have it in New York in 1968. But I don't think we ever had it in Boston, you see? You see? So, but now it's getting so that we have to go to very large cities that have large hotels, because what happens is, what has happened, for example, like in San Diego, they didn't have a hotel big enough to house us all together. So this one was in this hotel and this one, and it's a pain in the ass. Nobody likes to go, you know, they want to be where the action is, you see?
Being in the places.
Besides which, as a result of that, we are also, because of the growth and the development, now we have a very large group of commercial exhibits. We make a lot of money out of that, you see. And being under one roof, so naturally, you know, you're there, and it helps the organization. But one of the leading lights, one of the men that has really made the contribution of making the organization what it is, the man that planned behind all this thing, that made sure that this guy was going to do this and contact this guy, is Jack Friedland. You can say that Grossman is the father of endodontics from the standpoint of the technical aspect or the clinical aspect. Jack is the father of the Endodontic Association. If it wasn't for his efforts and his energies and the manner in which he went about it, we would not have an endodontic association with the money and the backing and the development that we have as a result of his efforts. You know, he established the Endowment Foundation. That book that you have on inflammation is a result of their help. They're supporting the...
this project.
Oh, is that so? Oh, there you are. So he devised a means of getting money. And what he did was, for example, he asked each one to give, say, $1,000. He said, look, let me have one endodontic molar a year for 5 years. Okay? And when they gave these courses... And for instance, if I would participate to give the course, and then they would charge, you know, they made money on the courses, and they said, all right, we'll pay your expenses, but the honoraria, we'll credit it to your contribution.
Terrific.
They got a hell of a lot of money. They're supporting Kim's work, you know, the fellowship.
Mm-hmm.
And they support a lot of other things. But that's a small aspect. The important point was to get ADA recognition. You know?
Now, was Dr. Friedland a real key person in getting ADA recognition?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Without him, it would have never taken off the ground. And he always worked from the background. You never know. Nobody ever saw him operate. He never wanted to be in the forefront. He was moving behind the scenes. He would tell the guy, look, I think you ought to do this. I think you ought to do that. Or if the guy didn't do this, I don't think it's a good idea. Or let's get this guy's opinion, you see, and so forth and so on. And it's a result of his efforts that endodontics is what it is today. The recognized specialty, and the regard and the respect that it has in the other professions, and the esprit de corps that exists in endodontics does not exist in any of the other specialties. They don't cut each other's throat. They don't discriminate. They don't say, look, I'll vote for you now and you vote for me next year. Everything is on the up and up. And we don't allow anybody to try to usurp any power. And we try, through his efforts and others, we try to be as equitable as possible in our selection in the boards, in our selection of the various committees, and the selection on the executive committee. We try to balance it out from the standpoint of regional. We try to, of course, first and foremost, will they do the job if they're given the assignment? And it's no buddy-buddy stuff, you know? You're my buddy, I'm going to let you, nothing doing. It works on the basis of ability, you know. What can you do for the organization? And I think...
I sat on the executive committee a while back.
Yeah.
As a student representative.
That's right, I remember you.
I was very impressed. Very, very impressed at the amount of work that was done, you know, in the course of a year, and the way it was handled. And
that's right.
But
you know,
you know,
you have to have direction to this. It just doesn't happen that way. You have to have direction.
And
many times, you know, you have to get on the phone and sit on the guy's ass and push him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I remember you being on the executive.
And Dr. Friedland was really the one that was doing this, the one that was...
Yes, sir. You never saw him there, did you? You never even connected him with any of that, right?
I had connected him, but it wasn't because of, you know, observation. It was because of his, you know, knowledge of the mechanisms.
That's right. That's right.
He is by no way an ostentatious...
Oh, no. Quite the opposite. Quite the... He wouldn't... I mean...
Very capable.
And he's very self-effacing, very self-effacing.
But he has never been president.
Oh, yes, he has.
When was that now?
1965.
Okay.
Yeah, he was president just at the time of the first examination. And nobody ever thought that endodontics would be a specialty. I remember Sam Seltzer said, "Yeah, I'll be an old man with a long beard before I'll see it."
Probably
1965, and then. Well, he was saying that in 63, 62, or 63, yeah. And 1965 we gave the first exam.
65,
you
gave the first exam.
Yes, sir.
I thought it was 66.
65. I remember 65 because my wife, incidentally, while I was an intern, I forgot to tell you that that's where I met my wife. She was the pharmacist. And just to give you some idea of what kind of a cocky guy I was because of the fact that all this crap that I got in school was way out of line and I was looking for new approaches and so forth. I made up a list of drugs that I wanted in the clinic. Because what I saw, the kind of drugs they had, they were practically none there. I came in there and I told her I need these drugs and so forth. She said, "Well, when I have time, I'll make it, you know." And that sort of took me off my feet. What the hell are you telling her? You know, you get this idea of the doctor shit, you know, that you had in those days. Why is she telling the doctor, "Oh, I don't know when she'll have time"? After all, she's supposed to serve me, you know. So I wait a week, she doesn't. So I see the head of the department and dentistry at our hospital, say, "Dr. Tasman, you better go over there and talk to him." So he comes over, and she puts on a smile. She says, "I told Dr. Bender when I have time, I'll do it." She says, "I didn't realize it." I mean, she was the only one there that was servicing the whole goddamn place, you know. So, I guess I had to marry her before I got the goddamn drugs. But anyway, that's where I met my wife, and she supplied me with the drugs. And to this day, sometimes I ask her what's the dosage and so forth, and she'll tell me. So.
Okay. Let me have your address here. So that
Elkins Park House.
E-L-K-I-N-S.
Right.
Separate word, park.
Park House.
Three words, huh?
Yeah, and it's Elkins Park, PA. 19117. And the telephone number is 924-0309. The area code is 215.
Okay.
All right. So, incidentally, I guess you got the history book of that, Milas. You can get that. Yeah. So, any of those statements that I made or dates that I have said are in there. As a matter of fact, he has some of the kind of programs that we used to have. So, you get some idea. I might also say, you know, we started a Journal of Endodontics. I think it was quarterly, and it was Dr. Kaiser of Ohio State was the editor. And after about four or five articles, it died. And then we decided to have it some kind of representation, so we joined up with the Triple O Journal. And they gave us an endodontic section. And that was under, the hell's his name up at Harvard, the pathologist, the old man. He was with Henry Goldman. He wrote that big text on Toma. Dr. Toma. And he would, we'd have one or two articles or something like that. We'd have three, I mean, you know. Finally, we decided we didn't want that. After all, we were paying $15 or $10 at that time, and we had about 1,000 members or 800 members. Well, that's a big chunk to them. So they gave us an editor. I mean, we had our own editor. I think the first one was Hedman. And then I followed Hedman. And then there was a decision as to whether we want to have our own journal. And I was very much against our own journal for a number of reasons. One is, and I think at the time bore me out, number one is this. If we have endodontic articles, and if I would write in a journal that had, say, 12 or 14,000 circulation, which the Triple O Journal had, my article would be seen by many people, number one. Number two, it gave the other people, those that are interested in oral medicine, oral pathology, and oral surgery, gave them a chance to see what endodontics was doing, you see. And then we decided, finally, towards the latter part of my editorship, I stepped out because I became president-elect and president. Gave it to Worth Gregory, and we assigned him the idea of looking in for our own journal. And so we got ADA to do the publishing for us. And now we're at a point where we want to do our own journal independent of the ADA. So, because the ADA, the contract that we have with them, rather, until 1980, is that they have the right to advertise in our journal, and we can't restrict them as to what they can advertise. Because they can advertise, of course, by Sargenti, or N2, you see? So we decided no ads, but now they're bothering us that they want ads. See, because that's extra income for them. And as a result of having our own journal, we figured that journal to run independently and break even, you need about 4,000 or 4,500 subscribers. Well, we got 2,300 membership, so there's 2,300. Right. And we got 65, we got about 4,200 independent subscribers.
Very good.
So we have a subscription of 6,500 people now subscribed to the Endo Journal, you see.
Very good.
And then on top of that, we had our newsletter that we get sent out independently. That wasn't in the Triple O Journal. By having our own journal, we can now have all the news that we want, which you see now in the journal. So that's how the growth and development of the journal and the growth and development of the organization. And I would say that 90% is due to the work of Jack Friedland. So I think that many of these various conferences, you see, like the Conference on Inflammation that they had at the West Coast, that was his idea. The conference that we had on the Pope Biology in Memphis, Tennessee, that was his idea. And they made money. They made money on it, you see. So, and then, of course, they turn it back for educational purposes through the Endowment Foundation. So I think that, as I said, the growth and development of our organization is primarily due to that. And as a result of that, I felt so strongly that I decided to establish a chair in endodontics in his name at the University of North Carolina. You know, there's only one chair in endodontics in the United States, or for that matter in the world, and that's at NYU. Nobody knows about it. I don't know why it's not publicized. And this is going to be the second chair. And because of what I started this, now the University of Pennsylvania is going to establish one in Lou Grossman's honor. So what I'm doing now is, what I'm primarily busy now is to solicit funds for this chair. You might get a letter from me. I'm going to ask you to contribute one molar.
One molar.
As a matter of fact, one molar a year for 3 years, 5 years, whatever you want. But as a matter of fact, I spoke to Shep Goldstein, and I gave him a pledge card.
What is the chair at NYU?
That's Bleckman is the chairman now. He used to be dean.
Yes.
He resigned from the deanship, because his wife died, and he didn't want to bother with the goddamn faculty and so forth and so on. But anyway, there's a chair in endodontics. This was established in honor of Samuel Cohen, who was chairman of the endodontic department in 1926. And he died when he was quite young, and his brother-in-law put up the money. So it wasn't on the same basis like I'm doing, trying to solicit from the AAE group and members of his family and the members of the business community in Charlotte, North Carolina, where Jack is practicing and living. So the last few months I've been busy sending out letters and soliciting for the organization.
Very nice that you're doing that.
Well, I think he deserves it. And then besides which, you see, if you examine the various dental schools and compare it with the medical schools, many medical schools have chairs in the various disciplines. For example, they established one in my brother's name at Mount Sinai, New York, known as the Mars B. Bender Chair of Neurology. You see? And the dental schools don't have it. This is the first chair that's going to be established at the University of North Carolina. Tufts doesn't have one. Harvard doesn't have one in dentistry. Not that I know of. Michigan doesn't have it. Penn had one before that. That was the Darby Chair in Operative Dentistry. So I have to raise $250,000.
that's a monumental task right there.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right,
thank
so
you.
You'll mail this
yes,
back
I'll
to
mail that back to you.
And, take your time.